Hi, this is Ezra. You're listening to Two Queers, Five Books, an outgrowth of another podcast called Two Queers, Four Questions. In this one, Agnes and I are learning the weekly Torah portion and finding out what there is to say about it, uncovering its queer side. I wanted to mention, which I haven't before, that the text of these episodes can be found at tumblr.com/2q5b. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for learning with us. Hope you enjoy. Parshat Tetzaveh. We're deep in the second book of the Torah now, the book called Shmot. That doesn't mean Exodus. It means names. Why is this book called the Book of Names? On the surface, it's a reference to its opening sentence, Ve'ele shmot b'nei Yisrael haba'im mitzrayma et Yaakov ish uveto ba'u. And these are the names of the children of Israel who came into Egypt with Yaakov. Every man came with his household. The names listed, then, are the literal children of Israel, the 12 brothers whose names became the names of the tribes of Israel. Every man came with his household. No sisters are listed by name, though there were sisters. Wives, children, no names for them, just these 12 brothers. The theme of names hangs over the whole book, but only if you are paying attention. And so does the theme of siblings. Names and siblings are, of course, ideas that are linked. Who gives a name? Usually a parent, a different name for each child. These 12 brothers had a terrifyingly fraught relationship. Joseph's brothers nearly killed him. They hated him, partly for the special garment their father had made for Joseph, and only Joseph. They tore it off of him, stripped him naked, threw him into a pit, and sold him to slave traders. The end result was that they all ended up in Egypt, where their descendants were slaves. In the second chapter of Shmot, we meet a family that contains three young siblings. In that chapter, we only hear about two of them, and they do not yet have names, nor does their mother. A woman, she is called. A son, his sister. Living in slavery, it's as if they've been dehumanized beyond nameworthiness. And when the nameless mother puts her nameless son in a basket on the river in hopes that he might escape the government child killers, the nameless sister makes sure that he isn't harmed. Vatetatzev achoto mirachok, l'de'a ma ye'aselo. And his sister stood far off to know what would be done to him. Cain kills Abel. Ishmael is driven out of Abraham and Sarah's home in favor of Isaac. Jacob outwits Esav, and Esav plots to kill him. Joseph's brothers sell him to slave traders. But Miriam looks out for her brother. She saves his life. Miriam, Aaron, and Moses grow up to be a trio of siblings working in beautiful cooperation to rescue their people from Egypt and lead a social and spiritual revolution. In the Midrash, Moses and Aaron do this dance of humility and mutual encouragement, each ceding leadership to the other. Aaron, the older brother, is not jealous when he finds out Moses has been chosen by God to bring their people out of Egypt. He collaborates with him. He helps him speak to Pharaoh. And then Moses reciprocates that support. Here's a bit from the Midrash Tanhuma. Moses said to Aaron, "The Holy Blessed One has told me to ordain you as high priest." Aaron said to him, "You have labored on the tabernacle. Should I be made high priest?" He said to him, "By your life, even though you are being made high priest, it is as if I were being made high priest. For just as you were glad for me in my greatness, so I am glad for you in your greatness." Our parsha consists of commandments given by God to Moses about how his brother Aaron and Aaron's sons are to be dressed while they perform priestly rituals. The clothing is so fabulous and so meticulously described, it could almost seem like God is rubbing it in Moses' face. Why, after all, is Moses not the high priest with a dynasty of heirs? Numerous midrashim frame Aaron's anointment as priest as a punishment for Moses' initial attempt to refuse God's call to prophecy. "You didn't want the hard job," Now you don't get the fancy job. But Moses not only steps aside from the highest position of ritual authority, he himself does every physical preparation for Aaron to occupy that position. Moses lovingly returns the favor of his older brother's steadfast support up to this point. The tenderness and positivity is almost overwhelming. It's as if Cain, instead of killing him, had knitted Abel a sweater. Ve'asita vigdei kodesh la'aharon achicha l'chavod ul'tifaret. You are to make garments of holiness for Aaron, your brother, for glory and for splendor. Do not overlook this moment. The exile in Egypt began with a garment torn off in a jealous act of brotherly violence. Now those brothers' descendants have come out of Egypt, and their leader is asked to create and dress his brother in a beautiful garment, in love and humility, as an indispensable part of their service of God. Something is being healed in this relationship, something about what siblings can be to one another. The garment Jacob made for Joseph is called a ketonet pasim, often translated as an ornamented tunic. And now Moses makes a ketonet for Aaron to wear. And how is it ornamented? Vilakachta et shtei avnei shoham ufitachta alehem shmot bnei Yisrael. Shisha mishmotam ala even ha'echat ve'et shmot ha'shisha notarim ala even ha'shinit ketoldotam. And you shall take two shoham stones and engrave on them the names of the children of Israel. Six of their names on one stone and the other six names on the other stone, according to their birth. Here they are again. Shmot b'nei Yisrael, the brothers who nearly killed each other, now listed in perfect equality on an ornamented tunic, made by one brother, worn by the other. It's also positive and warm and fuzzy. Brothers at last have learned to cooperate. So here comes the feminist buzzkill. What about sisters? What about Miriam, the oldest sibling among the leaders? What about Dina, the daughter of Israel, not listed with the sons on the holy breastplate? Where the hell are they? There are a lot of answers one could give. But in my heart there are two, one short, one long. The short answer is easy. It's baked into all of us who live in a patriarchy built on countless generations of patriarchal norms. They're women. They're not there because they never are. They're supposed to be invisible. They do the dirty work. They cook and clean and they raise the babies. They don't have their name on a plaque. They don't serve in public office. Out of sight, out of mind. The long answer does not deny the short answer, which accurately describes the past and present. But the long answer dares to include the future. When I am most able to believe in the Torah as a divine document is when I can see it as laying out paths for us that we have not yet fully walked. We say in the Torah service every Shabbat, Dracheha Darche Noam, V'chol Netivoteha Shalom. Her ways, the Torah's ways, are ways of pleasantness, and all of her paths are peace. It can be a hard thing to say when you have just finished reading a portion of a text steeped in ancient habits of misogyny and violence. But the emphasis, in my mind, is on ways, paths. The most transformative ideas in the Torah are the ones that can point us in a direction, that lay out a pathway to be walked in our time and in the future we face. The progression from Cain and Abel to Miriam, Aaron, and Moses, by way of Joseph and his siblings, show us a pathway from violence to cooperation, from scarcity to abundance, from male infighting to feminine leadership. The walking of this pathway is nowhere near finished in the Torah as written, but it has begun. We have moved from a garment violently torn off of a sibling to one lovingly wrapped around a sibling. We have moved from brothers who kill each other to a sister who leads her people in song. We notice that Miriam's name means, literally, rebellion, and we know that the feminist rebellion of our era is in her name. Aaron's breastplate bears Shmot B'nai Yisrael, the names of the children of Israel. Those brothers had a sister named Dinah, whose name is not included. The gap where women have been erased in our Torah feels like an insult, but it can also be an invitation. We can take the loudest silences as opportunities to speak. The name Dinah means justice, but conjugated in the feminine. In the space where her name should have been, the unwritten future calls to us. In that space, I see visions of priests of all genders, with feminine justice emblazoned on our holy garments.